Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download of your choice and get a free month subscription to Audible by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 titles, including Chris Jericho's latest book, The Best in the World, At What? I Have No Idea, and Dusty, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream. Hey, maybe you want something else. I got one of Nick Offerman's audiobooks, and he narrates it himself. It's hilarious. It's great. It's entertaining. Get any audiobook available that you'd like for absolutely no cost. It's free. Go claim your audiobook for free today at audibletrial.com/missspots. Now, enjoy the show.
Time to play the game!
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast, a pro wrestling podcast from the perspective of two lifelong fans that simply don't have enough wrestling going on in their lives. So we decide to talk about it on the internet through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Tommaso Ciampa. To my Johnny Gargano, here's Kevin.
Qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa, yeah.
Oh. Indie fans will get that reference,
and no one else will, most likely. I just wanted to say that we are drinking whiskey and have been for several hours, so that's a thing.
I feel like we have been for several days.
It's been a long, many day of the wrestlings, so let's jump right into it.
4 days worth of wrestling we're going to cover right now, starting with NXT TakeOver Toronto. Canada got 4 days worth of WWE wrestling. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is up to you. We'll figure it out probably by the end of this podcast. And this was a fun show. Maybe some shocking things going on to it, but
let's just say this: we called all these matches. I think we pretty much were on the same page. We all said, I think between the five matches, I think we all called the same winners.
Yeah,
I believe.
I do too.
And we were wrong on I think it was three of the five.
Yes.
I think it was three of the five. Yes. So that was good.
NXT made us wrong.
NXT did make us wrong and delivered a good show.
I even at the end of this show, despite feeling weird about like not knowing what was going on, like I did on Sunday, I was still happy with the way that the show turned out.
I wasn't thinking about that until you just said it, but I did not necessarily, quote-unquote, agree with the booking on NXT, but still felt good afterwards and felt like I got punched in the gut after Survivor Series. So that is a strange dichotomy.
So jumping right into it, we had a battle of two Canadian fellows, Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger, taking on one another, both insanely over for this match. Roode had a wonderful entrance with a choir singing his song that I only recently have gotten out of my head and is probably going to be back into my head starting tomorrow. And then Ty Dillinger having a huge pop coming out. I mean, this dude has gotten insanely over, and being in his home country, because Canada is like the largest state in the world, because they support anyone who has ever been born in their country. This didn't play out how we thought it was going to, with Bobby Roode going over and cleanly, of sorts. But I think it played everything perfectly. Roode came out looking good in this, and Dillinger didn't come out looking bad. If anything, he still looked just as good, if not better.
The crowd was into this every step of the way. It was a well-built match. They They fed off the crowd. They slowed it down when they needed to slow it down, and they built up to the finish. Dillinger did take a ring post at the end, so there's a little bit of leeway there where you might say, well, you know, maybe it wasn't 100% clean, even though, you know, the ring post at this point is an object you can use and you're not going to get DQ'd for it. Rude going over was very shocking to me, but I think even just keeping the camera on and being able to see Dillinger being received by the crowd like he was, that's the kind of response we saw for Becky Lynch. It's the sign of the sign of respect we saw for Sasha Banks when she lost. We've seen this many times. The crowd respects them, cares about them, and Dillinger is not hurt at all by this loss. Rude is elevated a bit, and from his already, you know, lofty place in the mind of the NXT fans. And now we got two guys that are probably better off after this match than they were before this match, which is perfect.
And considering when you take in the whole rest of the weekend, Dillinger's probably the most over person after this weekend because he was getting chants during shows he wasn't even on.
Yeah, that's great. It's a fun little thing for NXT fans.
Moving on, we had the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Authors of Pain taking on TM61 with Paul Ellering elevated above the ring inside of a cage. What I said pretty much went down. Ellering passed down a foreign object out of the cage to Akam and Razor. Razor. And it didn't necessarily lead right to the finish, but it gave that heel credibility to that team. And I think that this is a feud that can still continue on because TM61 are definitely the indie crowd, the NXT crowd favorites in this. And you got the Authors of Pain over even further as the heels. I love the fact that they had a heel winners of this tournament after you had the two ultimate baby faces last year with Finn and Joe in that, the odd tag team, but they were both the most over people there winning. Now you give a real tag team, a heel tag team that credibility with this win. I'm looking forward to seeing them, but you know, also with what we saw after this, that can lead into something else as well.
Listen, second verse, same as the first. This is another match that both guys come out looking better than when they came in. Authors of Pain winning this tournament is a very good thing for them. Ellering adds a different dimension because we haven't seen a lot of managers in NXT.
Traditional managers at that.
That's a very important point. They also, they have a ways to go. This match was just okay, in my opinion.
Yeah.
This was not a barn burner. This was not a technical wrestling, you know, exhibition. I think the Authors of Pain have a ways to go for their overall presentation, their ring work, but TM61 looked incredible. There were power moves put on by guys that were half the size of Authors of Pain and really just showed the ability of those guys. I think there's a ready-made continuing feud between these two teams that is not involved in the tag team championship, which is always very important to have other tag team feuds going on. Mm-hmm. I think that the sympathy being built up for those baby faces is huge. And I think the Authors of Pain as this dominating tag team is a really good entity to have in NXT at this point. The chain not factoring in the decision, which is a little bit bizarre. Maybe something I wouldn't have booked.
Chekhov's gun?
Yeah, possibly. But at the same time, I was happy with the match, and I was happy with the outcome. I thought it was well done.
Yeah. These were who we expected to win the match. They were who we thought they were, quoting the late Dennis Knight. And it was a fun match, fine match. I say fun too much.
And
apparently.
Fine.
And good for the Authors of Pain. They've done a great job of building them up since their debut.
Consistent, straightforward booking.
Yeah.
consistent is one word that we do not hear enough in WWE, because consistency does not work.
No, we don't.
Consistent, straightforward booking gets people over. That's just the way it works.
Then we had, I'm just going to call it right now, not only match of the night, match of the weekend.
Oh, for sure.
DIY against the Revival for the NXT Tag Team Championships. The Revival is the best tag team in the world, in my opinion, right now. And I hate saying in my opinion right now, because I want to just say they're the best tag team in the world.
DIY. The crowd was on fire for them. And this match was built so well. Gargano selling on the apron after being beaten down.
He's the ultimate face in peril.
The flourish that we had for the first fall with the Revival. They built this crowd, just like in their previous matches, just like their matches with American Alpha. They built this crowd from a crowd that appreciated the presentation and wanted to see this match to a crowd that was frothing at the mouth for the finish. And that is done with great heel work. When the Revival comes out, they still do not get the boos that I think they should get.
Yeah.
I still think, and they get boos. They're a good heel team. They do not get the appreciation on their entrance. But by the end of their matches, mm-hmm. subconsciously, everyone in that crowd wants them to lose. Everyone in that crowd wants the other team to win. And that is impeccable, impeccable tag team wrestling. Just by the numbers, just everything about their presentation works. And they have made so many of these feuds. And I hated seeing them lose, by the way. I hated seeing them lose. We called them winning. They just are such great champions, but they continue.
I called them winning in two falls. Yeah,
they continue to make these takeover specials special, truly special with the work they're doing in this ring. And it just gets me on the edge of my seat every time. I love it.
Scott Dawson, Dash Wilder, if you are ever listening to this, you guys are fantastic. The only team that I can think of in modern times that does this is the Briscoes from Ring of Honor. You don't have much experience with them, which I would love to introduce you to some of their old work as a tag team. They're now mostly singles wrestlers, which is strange to me, but like they are so old school in their tactics, their mentality, their psychology in the ring, and everyone always says that the Revival are these throwbacks to Arn and Tully, which is absolutely true. But there are teams in the modern day era that do the same thing and bring old school wrestling to the forefront with tactic. And one of few things that I can remember talking to you about during this card, because I was drunk, was I love tag team wrestling more than I love singles wrestling, because I feel like they can tell a better story with four guys than they can with two.
Well, I'll tell you this. I also think a very important part of this, we've seen them have amazing matches with Gargano and Ciampa before with American Alpha. They're getting better. They're really getting better. And if they are destined to just make everybody look better that goes with them, if they're not destined to hold those titles for a year, if they're not destined to go on to the WWE main roster and be the guys because the crowd can't appreciate them, they're just there to make everybody look incredible. I think that'll be a good spot for them. And I think they'll revel in it, because I think they care about this industry and they care about the craftsmanship and the ring work that it takes to get other people over. And I think that's wonderful.
Before the Revival, before the mechanics, Dawson was this kind of throwback wrestler on NXT, a very old school mentality with everything that he was doing. He was a little bit of a enhancement talent, but like the dude knew what he was doing in the ring. He knew how to tell a story. He knew how to work with whoever he was with. And then he had an injury that kept him out for a while. And then he came back and they made a tag team with Dash Wilder. And that guy is probably one of the top five smartest wrestlers in the industry today. And, it is a pleasure to watch him work the things that he does in that ring. And, I feel like incorporating him with Dash, who is, I think from what I understand, a little bit younger than, Dawson, who is,
he's taken to it like a fish to water. He really has.
Really?
Listen, we've gushed, we've blushed, we've blustered over the revival. I also just want to say one quick thing. The ref is an important part of a good, production of a wrestling show. The ref was here and present in this match. He caught Dawson, being the illegal man at one point.
Yeah.
This is an important part of the presentation. Having a ref that has control and sees what's actually going on in the ring and isn't just a passerby. Every part of this presentation is important to make it feel like a real fight. From the competitors to the ring announcers to the refs to the commentators. And what NXT does is bring them all together and give us that full package. So kudos to the referees. Kudos to the presentation in general, because across the board, it's shining.
Yeah, because we did see the following night plenty of instances where the referee didn't do their job.
Right.
And we'll get to that.
And it hurts the presentation.
After this, we had the NXT Women's Championship with Asuka defending against Mickie James. The result went as we thought it was going to be, but there was a story to this, and it was, I think, a very well done story. Asuka was a little bit more intense. She was a little bit more aggressive. And at the end, she refused to shake hands with Mickie James. These subtle heel tactics to her.
Asuka is a brute. She is a dominating, aggressive, striking presence. It seems like she should be a heel, right? Well, she's been a babyface because people love her work and respect her as a performer. This shows us that maybe she's going more in that heel avenue. She was dominated for most of this match. Mickie James had her number. And the win was almost kind of out of nowhere. I mean, it was after being beaten down for a while. Asuka got her and caught her in her submission hold and won the day. We were very surprised by this. We thought this would be an extended, not necessarily a squash match, but we thought that Asuka would dominate most of the match. We were wrong. Even in the matches that we called the right ending, we were still wrong. which is not surprising with us. But I like this. I think that Asuka, a change of her presentation to be more of a heel, I think is a great idea. I think it fits the character more. I think it fits well with her.
Yeah. It's.
And Mickie James looked great, by the way.
She definitely did.
There's more there for her in the WWE if they give her the chance.
Yeah. Certainly invite her back to do more. The women's title in NXT has been a little strange because even the faces have been well appreciated. It's hard to have a true heel in NXT as we're getting to know, because the heels get appreciated for being heels.
For being good at their job.
NXT or the Revival might be the best heels because they don't get as much, hype from the indie crowd.
If they ever go up to the main roster, and I hope it's soon, they'll get a send-off, an incredible send-off, you have to imagine.
So, we've had, we went from Charlotte, who was playing heel as a champion for a period of time, who was being cheered to be appreciated as how well she was doing it as a heel, then to Sasha Banks, who was essentially a heel. She was kind of a face against Charlotte, then kind of a heel. Either way, she was cheered for being good, but then she went against the ultimate babyface in Bayley.
There was still dueling chance at every one of those matches.
Yes. But like Bayley was the only true baby face that we've had as a champion. And then they did baby face versus baby face with the, you know, the air quotes, her against Asuka. Asuka wins the title. And now we're moving Asuka in the heel territory. ROH was doing this kind of thing for a while where they had faces winning and faces turning into heels for a period of time. And it was a little weird. And it was one of the things that kind of got me out of, Ring of Honor for a while, is just that it always felt like every face champion turned heel and lost to then a face who then turned heel, who then lost to a face.
Listen, we're going to see what happens with this. There's no definite understanding of what's going to happen with Asuka, but listen, she has a brutal offense. She could work very well as a heel. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And, moving on to the main event. Shinsuke Nakamura defending the NXT Championship against Samoa Joe. Would this have been your, like, bet-all, win-all?
Ironclad lock. They are not going to pin Nakamura at this point. He is the face of the company at this point, of that brand of the company at this point. And there is no way Nakamura loses to Joe. And Nakamura loses to Joe. Now, we did get a low blow.
Mm-hmm.
We did get
ref shenanigans.
Well, slammed onto the stairs and then the muscle buster. There's plenty of wiggle room in there where did Joe cheat? He obviously did a low blow. That's cheating. But this was a back and forth affair the whole time. Nakamura, Joe attacked the knee the whole time. And then Nakamura kind of sold the knee and then kind of forgot about the knee later on, which that was a small little dig I have to give to this match, that at one point Nakamura just kind of forgot that the knee was beaten down for 15 minutes and then used his knee as offense for the rest of the match. Small dig, still a very good match. You know, I would have preferred Nakamura going over. I think Nakamura is the guy right now in NXT. I want to see him on the main roster, and I wanted to see him on the main roster pretty much not being pinned. I like that. I'm the guy who wants to see the winning streak. I'm the guy who wants to see the first person to pin somebody. Joe pinning him? Listen, I can't get too upset about that. We love Samoa Joe. But I didn't think this was the right time. I thought he should have continued being unbeaten. But still, end of the day, a great competitor who is a believable champion has that title. And we still have a feud between him and Nakamura, you imagine.
Oh, yeah. We have the first ever two-time NXT champion. What I think would have worked here, and I've actually thrown this out as an option for a number of matches, so maybe I'm too keen to this idea, is the pass out. Have Nakamura pass out in the Kikita clutch instead of being pinned, because it saves the pin.
That could have worked. I'm just interested to see where they're going with the NXT championship picture. I'm interested to see where they're going with Nakamura. My guess is they have a plan. One of the reasons why I disagreed...
They're smart on that brand.
Well, one of the reasons why I disagreed with some of the other things that happened this weekend and this week was because I don't think they have a very good, solid plan that's going to actually pay off at some point. I'm confident that the people in NXT have a plan, and that's why I think that this was unexpected. Wasn't a huge fan of the finish, but I'm buying into it. I think that they'll do some good things.
Oh, absolutely. NXT hasn't really swerved us the wrong direction.
They haven't jumped the shark, in my opinion.
Right now. So I do believe them. I have faith in them.
I think we should get onto a company or a part of the company that we don't have as much faith in, and that's Raw and SmackDown, and that's Survivor Series.
Yeah. Oh, well, real quick, grade on TakeOver.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought this was a A.
I was going to say A minus.
Yeah.
Myself. The result of the main event is probably the thing that pushed that in that direction. But who knows? That could change based off of what you were saying, seeing what they do with Nakamura,
sure,
hereafter. All right. Survivor Series, the 30th edition of the Thanksgiving Classic, as they have called it in the past. We had only six matches announced for a 4-hour card. And we got two pre-show matches.
Well, before the pre-show matches, I have to mention the social media lounge with Y2J and Kevin Owens.
The best.
I'm going to take, listen, I'll tell you this.
You want to do a one fucking thing about this?
No. I will just say one of the funniest, most charming, well done, spontaneous seeming, pieces.
Grassroots.
That I've seen on WWE in a long time. I'm talking about back to Rock Austin era. This was incredible. The one thing I will say about it, these are heels. They should not be this entertaining. And I know that entertainment is different from funny, is different from likable. You can be entertaining and also be hated. They are so good.
Because
so
Miz
sharp,
is entertaining and hated.
Right. So funny, so sharp, so on the ball, but they were so good that you can't help but cheer these guys. And I think it's terrible to say that's a problem, but I think it's a problem. That's why they're having a hard time being true heels, because they're so good.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a great segment, and then we get into the pre-show matches.
We had two pre-show matches. We had a six-man cruiserweight match, because why not?
Do we even need to talk about this? This is the same match we've been seeing.
There's plug-and-play players, but
it just seems like we're plug-and-play. Another cruiserweight match that they're trying to get the athleticism over so that they're hyping the crowd up, but there's no storyline, there's no development, so no one cares.
It was even mentioned during the match that Gulak, Nice, and Daivari have tagged together. Yes, on the last pay-per-view, they did, and it was against Rich Swann, but he had then Cedric Alexander and Lince Dorado instead of TJ Perkins and Noam Dar.
Right.
Faces go over. Like, it's a good athletic match. All of these guys, all six of these guys, are good, very good in the ring. And they deserve to have more going on to them than just random six-man match to have them on. Create stories around them. We've talked about this so often. Like, and then you and I were going back and forth on our own, just text messaging, last night on Raw with Daivari. Like, this kid is obviously talented, very talented in the ring. And they want to turn him into this new Iron Sheik. He's the evil foreigner. Even though he's born and raised in America, he's an American citizen.
Done to death. Overly used, will not get anyone over. In general, and in overall, this will not get anyone over the way that they're presenting the cruiserweights.
No.
So that's what I have to say about that.
Babyface's win, I think, it was Rich Swann over Daivari, I think.
Can't remember at all.
Pre-show match number two, Luke Harper against Kane. This should have been a 5-minute extended squash. How come every time we talk about Kane, everything should be a 5-minute extended squash?
Because Kane should be there to put other people over.
Exactly.
And that's just the way it should be. And I have all the respect in the world for Kane. His character has evolved, has done crazy things over the years. He needs to still be a part of the company. He's done great things in a role other than a performer. He's got a lot to give to the business still, but Luke Harper, it's part of the Wyatt family, is a bad motherfucker, and he should be going over Kane at this point, not losing and looking weak. Sorry. I don't think you can make Kane, in the eyes of the fans, big enough to let someone beat him and look special, because the fans don't buy into it anymore. Luke Harper, part of the Wyatt family, we saw later on in the program, the Wyatt family did some special things. They were made to look like a bigger deal. It would have been a bigger deal if Luke Harper had gone over cleanly in short order. So Luke Harper loses, and my response is go fuck yourself.
This, Yeah. This is not a knock at anything Glenn Jacobs has done.
Not at all.
In his career, because he's done wonderful things. He had some questionable things prior, but like Kane has been a very good character for well more than a decade. And it's time to move on past that. It's time to embrace the new, the young. Luke Harper is both of those. He's a fantastic talent. And the fact that not only did Kane win, but that he won in a pretty normal fashion. Like, if Kane would have got a fluke pin over it, maybe a little more.
They gave Kane a win over Luke Harper. I think that's a problem.
Yeah. Moving on to the main card. We started off with the women's match. Team Raw against Team SmackDown. Of course, things that don't really matter in the scheme of everything because there's nothing to gain. Team Raw wins. Charlotte and Bayley ended up being the survivors out of their team. Not Soul, because there was more than one. And we had Charlotte attack Bayley after the match, of course, leading to storylines between the two of them that we thought might be played off a little bit more the night after, and they kind of dropped the ball a little bit on that, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Didn't think that this match, going into this match, it meant nothing. There was no consequence to any of it, but they did two things right. They set up Bayley and Charlotte at the end of the match,
mm-hmm.
and they set up possibly either Carmella and
someone with Nikki Bella
and Nikki,
yeah.
or maybe even Natalya and Nikki early on, because Nikki was injured and Natalya had to replace her on the team. Mm-hmm. So they set up matches for the future. This is what these matches were built for, and I think that was a good part of it. All in all, cannot believe they had Nia Jax submit to the Disarmer. I love Becky Lynch. Nia Jax should not be submitting. Similar to the fact I don't think Shinsuke Nakamura should have been pinned, Nia Jax does not need to be submitting at this point in her evolution as a character. She is a monster. She needs to be booked that way until she goes to the title stratosphere with the women's division, and then someone conquers her, and that's a big deal. That bothered me. Also, very interested that it seemed like Becky was more over than even Bayley was with this crowd. I don't know if there was like a SmackDown bias or something. I was very surprised by that. And it was an interesting last couple people involved in the match. Overall, it was fine, but I was much more intrigued with what it set up later on or the next chapter than anything that happened in this match, because it didn't matter.
Yeah. You sum that all up pretty well. And yeah, the biggest point to me was that Nia Jax was pinned or submitted. Like, we both called that she's going to either be disqualified or counted out in this. And there was the opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
During the match, and they didn't go with that.
Or the best thing for her would have been a DQ. She just keeps beating somebody down to set up a feud.
Yeah.
We didn't see that. Okay, fine. It doesn't have to be the way we thought about it, but tapping, not a good choice at this point.
No. Miz defending the Intercontinental Championship against Sami Zayn was up next, and this was a fine, fine match. We were, anticipating some sort of shenanigans from either Miz and or Maurice for the finish of this, especially as the match went on longer. And we certainly were treated to that as Maurice rang the ring bell on her own accord, getting Sammy to, get off of Miz from, what did he had him in,
I don't know. I can't remember
I want to say it was a sharpshooter. Just because, you know,
it's
Canada
yeah.
and it's a screwy finish. So it's got to be a sharpshooter.
I can't remember what it was.
But, Sammy released thinking that he had won the match, and it obviously was not. Referee's like, I didn't call for that. Miz gets the roll up for the win, and Miz is a great heel champion.
By hook
yes.
or by crook.
Yeah.
I loved this finish. I know people don't like this kind of overbooked finish all that often. Miz, opportunistic, using Maryse, using heel tactics to win. I loved it. I thought it was really, really well done. Listen, these guys did not maybe put on the match that we thought that Dolph and Sammy might have put on. I thought they put on a very good match. There was a back-and-forth affair. Miz took control over after a while, beating down the babyface, getting some heat on the babyface, building up for the comeback. The crowd deflates as he loses. Miz holding that title is more important than Sammy winning it at this point. Mm-hmm. I would have loved, and my prediction was that Sammy would somehow finagle a jump to SmackDown via trade or something. We did not see any of that this week.
It was a good call, but yeah.
I think that would have been the next logical move. They decided not to go with it. Maybe it was never even discussed. Obviously, we have no idea. I think that would have been a good move. We didn't see it, but we still have Miz as a champion, and this was a good move.
I think that WWE saw us tweet about that, and we're like, oh, we can't go with that. We can't have a fucking podcast call our spots.
Sure.
After that, we had the tag team Survivor Series match with 10 on 10. If your partner was eliminated, the entire team was eliminated. Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. Team Raw wins. It was Anderson and Gallows, right?
No, it was Sheamus and Cesaro beating the Usos.
Yes, that's how much I remember about this match.
So we had Breezango eliminated in seconds. Yes. New Day right afterwards, which was shocking to see the New Day go out so quickly. And then, to me, I would say this. A lot of people said that this match was great, and they loved it, and there was so much exciting action. I could not disagree more. This was a clusterfuck. This was, to me, a lot of guys on the outside that should have been counted out and eliminated from the match. This was a lot of just nonsense spots. I thought this match was mostly garbage up until the very end when you had Cesaro and Sheamus still around, when you had Enzo and Cass still around and the Usos, and then we ended up getting the Enzo and Cass eliminated down to the Usos and Cesaro and Sheamus. And the reason why I like to finish was we did not expect to see either one of these teams near the end. We thought American Alpha, we thought maybe Rhino and Slater, we thought maybe the New Day, and we finally see Cesaro and Sheamus getting on the same page to win a match, and I liked that. It's been time for a while to see that evolution of that team. I love the fact that we got a finish that we were not expecting, and I thought it was, I thought the finish was good. I thought pretty much everything leading up to the finish was just overbooked nonsense.
Yeah, for the most part. I was hoping that at the end of this match that we would have a moment that would define them ultimately as a tag team, kind of like the Hogan and Macho Man handshake, where, yeah, we're a team at this point. And we did kind of get more of their, we're not quite a team yet.
Oh, well, you know, Sheamus kind of spurred Cesaro when he went for a handshake at the end, but he did give a brogue kick to one of the Usos, the one that was not in the submission at the end.
They worked well together
during the match, not afterwards. Exactly. And they're working towards that. I'm a fan of this tag team. I think they've done a good job with an angle that probably shouldn't have happened in the first place, but has worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah. Then after this, we had the Cruiserweight Championship match with the Brian Kendrick. The Brian Kendrick defending against Kalisto, where also not only was the championship on the line, but also the entire division, whether or not they would be on Raw or SmackDown. It's interesting because as I look at Wikipedia's results, they have it completely wrong on here because it can be edited by anyone. But the official result of this match was Brian Kendrick won by disqualification because he was attacked by
Baron Corbin.
And not Byron.
Byron Corbin's a whole different character.
Baron Corbin attacked him, therefore he was the winner of the match and retains his title, and also just he keeps Raw on there. If you wanted to get into a silly thing, which you talked about before, if Baron attacked Kalisto, it would keep Brian Kendrick as the champion, but you could argue then the division goes over to SmackDown because Kalisto won, but they didn't go with that. Even though Wikipedia says Kalisto won via DQ, no, it was actually Brian Kendrick that won.
Yeah, it had to be the other way around, or else the division would have switched over. Kendrick continued his amazing work. I thought this match was well done. Kalisto has been very spotty in his work.
Yeah.
Kind of since he'd been up in the main roster.
A little botchy.
Yeah, he's a little botchy. And there was a couple spots in here where he had some problems. I thought this match was well done. The crowd did not seem to care. And one of the reasons why is because they didn't give him any reason to care. These guys have had no interaction. There's been no real storyline to it. And that's what you get when you don't build something up. That Spanish fly onto the outside ring apron, that was ridiculous. And that kind of got the crowd into it. And the second they got the crowd into it, they had Baron Corbin come out and kind of ruin the party. Mm-hmm. So it does make the cruiserweight title seem like an afterthought because it was only to set up a Baron Corbin versus Kalisto feud. I don't like that so much, but it was a decent way to get out of having Kendrick not necessarily win, but keep the title on Raw. This is like a 50-50 thing for me. The outcome was fine. The way they got to it seemed like they were treating the cruiserweights as an afterthought.
Is Kendrick the most well-booked champion right now?
Kendrick's character is the most three-dimensional character right now on the program, and probably the person that is the most, he's in the spot where he's supposed to be. Kevin Owens is incredible, but he's cheered by half the audience, right?
Yeah.
AJ Styles, incredible, cheered by half the audience. Miz is there as well. Miz and Kendrick are the two best champions on the show, on the shows in general, because they have the most three-dimensional characters and they're in the spots they're supposed to be in. Whether the crowd responds to it or not, that's on them. But I think as far as the booking, they're up there.
Dude is doing some of the best work of his career. He deserves this spot right now. He deserves a higher spot, in my opinion, but good for him.
Sure.
Looking forward to seeing more of that. Then we have the semi-main event of the evening with the singles wrestlers of male wrestlers of Raw taking on SmackDown. And we were pleasantly surprised by a victory, the survivors being the Wyatt family, Bray getting the final pin, and Randy Orton. There was a whole lot of stuff that went on in this match that was spotty is possibly a compliment to it. This was overbooked. There was way too many weird spots going on. Shane McMahon was booked to look like freaking Undertaker in this at certain points. And
I think that if we were to dissect this whole match down, it might take a whole podcast. So I think you're right when you said that this was so overbooked. There were several instances where guys should have just been counted out. We've seen that before in Survivor Series matches. This was poorly booked, overbooked, too long. I thought that this was a poor match overall. I liked, as you said, the Wyatts going over because it was different. We were not expecting it at all. We kept some Dean and AJ stuff going on in there. We saw a mini Shield reunion, blah, blah, blah. I think there's so much here to dissect. I don't know if we can get
Braun
all into
James
it.
Braun and James Ellsworth continue their feud.
But no, a lot of people love this match. I thought that it was less than mediocre. It was just a match. There was no rhyme or reason to this match at all.
No, this was built around spots and moments, and I'm sorry to say this, but too many people get caught up in those and then believe that that quantifies a good match, which it does not. You can have a great spot in a terrible match. And I'm not saying this was a terrible match, but it wasn't a good match. overbooked. There was too many weird, predictable spots of sorts. And even the unpredictable ones didn't really deserve those moments. Roman destroying Shane. Roman, everyone on Raw should have destroyed Shane before Roman concussed him.
Well, they shouldn't have been using tables. That's a DQ. If you're going to DQ Owens, why aren't you DQing other people for using tables?
Very, very true.
There's so much of this going on. I want rules.
This ref had no control over this
match. I want the NXT ref to come in there and start throwing people out and disqualifying them. I don't like matches where everything goes because it doesn't make any logical sense. And where do you go from there? Once there are no rules in any match, where do you go? How is there any story to be told? Old school, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old guy, but that's the way I feel. The end of the match, we got Orton actually sacrificing himself for Bray Wyatt, solidifying his place in the Wyatt family. That was a story to tell, and I was fine with it.
Yeah.
We had winners of these matches were people that we did not expect to win.
Yeah.
Right, of the Survivor Series matches. And I thought that was one good aspect of this pay-per-view.
Randy has solidified himself for now as a member of the family. Whether or not this is part of his games, we'll see. But this has been a weird storyline, to say the least, for the last month or so. Just how he gave up so easily and was like, if you can't beat them, join them.
The setup was poor. It could have been done much better.
But now we do have a dangerous stable.
And you weren't feeling it 2 weeks ago.
No.
So they're getting there.
Fake it
till you make it.
Did I not jump up out of my seat and run around your house with a beer in my hand as Bray pinned
Roman? It was mostly because they pinned Roman.
Yes, but it was also Bray. I loved it being Bray.
And you did do that. I think we have to go on to the main event, though.
All right. So should we spend as much time talking about it as the match was?
There's so much to talk about, but at the same time, I just feel we'll be wasting our breaths. Let's give a quick idea and then let's move on.
Goldberg beat Brock Lesnar in 1:26. He speared him twice, jackhammered him, and that was all she wrote.
I was so devastated by this conclusion of this match, mostly because I am one of those guys who believes that you can transfer heat onto somebody else. You can transfer a guy being so over who beats The Undertaker, who destroys John Cena, who destroys Randy Orton, who runs roughshod over the whole company. Someone that beats him needs to be an up-and-coming guy that you can give the keys of the kingdom and let them run with it. That's my viewpoint, right?
Yeah.
So when we saw a guy who, honestly, Mike and I do not care about, let's just make this really quick. Goldberg, to us, I think I'm speaking for you.
Thank you for going, because we did talk about this off-air.
Right.
This is a perfect analogy.
Goldberg, for us, is not someone we care much about. We find him to be a one-hit wonder in a very small pocket of WCW who was booked strong, who never really cared much about the industry.
He's
the ultimate warrior.
Yeah.
He's a guy who was never a very good worker, who put on some decent matches. Listen, Diamond Dallas Page and him did a great match at Halloween Havoc. He did some good work in the past, but this is not a guy that we care much about. We were not excited to see him. We did not look forward to seeing his matches. To see that guy win over Brock Lesnar, a guy who they built up so high, crushes us because Shinsuke Nakamura, Samoa Joe, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, even Roman Reigns, who we don't care for, would have been a better choice in our opinion to beat him. That being said, it was a shock. It will get people talking. And maybe it was the right idea. Goldberg is going to stick around. He's going to have future matches. He'll probably lose to Brock in the future. This is not for us. I think I'm talking for you, Mike. This is not for us.
Oh, yeah.
But for the wider public, people who grew up with Goldberg being their favorite. We were in our 19, 20-year-old range at that point. that's their ultimate warrior, even though we don't really care about our ultimate warrior because we find him to be an awful person, even before he passed away. Rest in peace, I guess. But this is, this was not our thing, but it's apparently a thing for the rest of the crowd. Apparently Vince made a deal with Goldberg. He's been very popular since coming back. They're trying to give the fans what they want. I think I'm cautiously optimistic. I hated this finish. Hated this finish. But maybe there's something good coming out of it.
I'm hopeful because we didn't read about this before we saw the match. We read about this hours, even into the morning afterwards, that he had signed on to do additional stuff. But this negates the Undertaker stuff as far as I'm concerned. This negates the fact that Brock Lesnar broke the streak. He beat the Undertaker at Hell in a Cell. He bloodied the man. He destroyed him. And now we have this mythical being of sorts in Brock Lesnar who is beaten by
nostalgia.
Yeah.
Beaten by nostalgia.
Exactly. A guy who hasn't wrestled in over 12 years, who hasn't cared about wrestling in 12 years, and it admitted then on Monday Night Raw, it took him, what was it, seven weeks to train for?
Right.
Where guys who have wrestled week in and week out, on all the house shows can't beat Brock, but the guy who trains for 7 weeks can.
This is not our thing. And that's what we have to come back to. We are not nostalgia guys. We want the next generation. We want Owens. We want Styles. We want Rollins. We want Cesaro. That's the guys that we want to see pushed. That's our perspective. And because it's our perspective, we don't like this. And that's just the way we have to leave it. It's not our thing. But if they have long-term ideas that may pay off, we may be pleasantly surprised in the future. For now, all we can say is we were shocked and appalled at that finish.
Yeah, because really, if you want to look at it, we were shocked and appalled that Brock beat Undertaker at WrestleMania.
We were shocked and appalled, quite honestly, when he destroyed John Cena, because we thought that would be more of a competitive match, even though we were thrilled to see something like that.
But they did something to turn Brock into the machine that he became.
And maybe this is a redemption story almost for Brock, that he underestimated Goldberg. There's ways to go with this.
There certainly is.
There's ways to go where it might work. End of the day, I don't like nostalgia. I like the future.
Exactly.
I want to build new stars. I don't give a Shawn Michaels is one of my favorite performers of all time. I would love to see Shawn Michaels wrestle one more match. I do not.
AJ Styles?
What's that?
Against AJ Styles.
Quite possibly. If Shawn Michaels showed up in that same position against Brock Lesnar, he should be beaten. This is Shawn Michaels we're talking about. This is a guy who I respect, who I have watched and admired for years. That is not the place for him to beat Brock Lesnar at that point. Going up against a guy like AJ Styles, he might. Maybe that is a win. Up against Seth Rollins, maybe that is a win. I don't know. But that position should not have even gone to Stone Cold Steve Austin if he were to come out of retirement. That's just our position. My position. I don't know if it's your position. I don't want the nostalgia thing. I want building new stars.
Because if I think about it from other sports standpoints, if Michael Jordan came out of retirement today and decided he was going to play for the Bullets or the Hornets, which he owns, and he was put up against LeBron James or Steph Curry, I expect him to lose because he hasn't been playing professionally. He might be one of the best of all times, but he hasn't played professionally in years. He's going to lose to the younger, better, stronger, more seasoned talent.
We're looking at this as a sport and want it to be presented that way. They're looking at it in a totally different way. I think we have to give a grade to this thing and move on.
Yeah. I'm going to give this show a D. D+.
I'm going to shock you here. I think the show is a B.
Okay.
And I think it was a B because even though I did not like a lot of what happened, I liked the Miz portion of this. I thought that Kendrick keeping the title was the right idea. And I loved the Wyatts going over. I loved Cesaro and Sheamus going over. And I'm going to give them the rope to hang themselves with the Goldberg and Lesnar angle and hope they got something in mind that's going to draw me in. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I think that they did a lot to give us something that we weren't expecting, and that's something, in my opinion.
All right. Why don't you take things over for Raw?
We're going to go through Raw. I think we're going to go through this pretty quickly. Goldberg opened the show, and Goldberg is going to be in the Royal Rumble. That was the whole heads and tails of it. He's going to be in the Royal Rumble. Stephanie challenged him to have one more title run left in him. And because Goldberg's going to be in the Rumble, you know you're going to spin off some kind of match through this. We're guessing it's going to be with Brock Lesnar again. The fact that he's staying around is something. I'm not thrilled about it. I don't really care much for him, but he's sticking around. So he's not just going to beat Lesnar and go away. Got to give him that.
No. What I see happening is Goldberg eliminates Lesnar. Lesnar grabs Goldberg's arm and someone else dumps Goldberg. It's going to be Sid Justice and Hulk Hogan all over again.
Perfect. I love every second of that. We end up with the New Day versus Cesaro and Sheamus. They earned a title shot, apparently, by winning the tag match the night before, winning the Survivor Series match. We ended up with the New Day cheating to win, distraction by Xavier Woods while Kofi Kingston was in the sharpshooter. The important parts about this, we've seen, and you mentioned this on Twitter, we've seen the New Day cheat to win several times recently.
Yes, yes we have.
We also saw some cracks forming. They were booed by a good portion of the audience. Now, they were in Canada. That's Bizarro World. It's just like going over to the UK. We get different fans kind of interacting in a different way. I think the New Day are ready for a heel turn. I think that they have. They've run their course as baby faces. It's time to move towards the heel. There is still some room left for development as a heel territory before they turned. I like the idea of Sheamus and Cesaro, Sheamus basically turning quote-unquote baby face and taking the titles off the New Day down the road. What do you think about that?
I think that you hit the nail on the head there. When you were telling me, you know, they turned New Day face at the best possible moment because they still had heel stuff that they could work with. Like, they were those cool heels, and then they ultimately made them baby faces. The New Day is still, for the most part, as baby faces. They are starting to get some boos, but at this point is where you should turn them heel because it's going to shock the majority of the crowd. Like, and that's what what turns are supposed to be about, is shocking the people who are...
And refreshing the character while there's still legs to the character. When you turn someone heel when no one cares about them anymore, no one still cares about them. So I think it's a good place to go, and I thought this was a fine way to set that up in the future. Enzo Amore was locked out of his locker room, presumably by Cass, and he was naked, and he was just strolling around. All right.
He was in a flesh-colored thong.
Well, for the purposes of kayfabe, he was naked. Ran into Lana, and this set up a match with Enzo Amore and Rusev later on. This was shocking to me because this is the PG era. Yeah. We don't see things like this very often. Enzo was pretty funny with this. The line, "Any publicity is good publicity," I thought was very funny. This was, for what it was, I thought this was well done and short enough that it didn't interfere with a lot of the rest of the show.
But at the same point, you had a babyface being naked in front of a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And being like, no big deal.
I'll give you that. That was not one of my favorite parts of this. And a lot of that's kind of sexual tension between him and Lana I didn't care for.
But and this is to ultimately, Lana has been treated like a slut, for lack of better terms,
by the Rock,
by the WWE.
By Roman.
And it's terrible because, like, slut shaming is a terrible thing. And like, and Lana has done nothing as a character to be portrayed really as a slut, but yet she has been treated like that. And it's a terrible, that is a terrible aspect to it. Yes, you might have some humor to it, but I hate how they constantly make Lana look like a tramp.
I agree with you on that. I think we'll move on to Stephanie and Mick gloating over the previous night for some reason. Even though they lost the most important, you'd think, Survivor Series match, they feel like they won 3 out of 5 important matches. Sammy joins them, and Mick puts him in a match with Braun Strowman as punishment for not taking the IC belt over to Raw.
Even though he was cheated out of it.
Even though he was cheated out of it, and even though he's asked for matches with Braun Strowman in the past. Seems a little weird, but that's what they were going with. Cedric Alexander and Arya Daivari are in the ring for a cruiserweight title match. Daivari grabs the mic.
Not a title match.
I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. For a cruiserweight match. Thank you very much. Daivari grabs the mic and starts speaking in a different language. Now, I don't know exactly what language it was, because I'm not very well cultured. The important thing here is that this is not 1985. This is not a culture that is so, jingoistic that this should be a thing that we continue to do. And,
but it kind of is.
Mike, I know, but it makes me sad. Alexander wins. Who gives a shit? There's no way that this character, Daivari has, is going anywhere, even though he is obviously talented, obviously has a lot to give to the company. They're saddling him with a archaic gimmick that has a shelf life of about a week and a half. And that's a goddamn shame.
Absolutely. Anyone who, I said on Twitter, anyone who watched Cruiserweight Classic knows that Daivari is skilled, both on the mic and in the ring. Like, he was able to deliver in Cruiserweight Classic a traditional heel, promo without having to get his culture involved in it, his background, a race, religion, anything like that. He could do that with no problem, but yet WWE resorts to falling back on this. He's an evil foreigner. No, he's born in Minnesota.
It's outdated, and it's a shame we're still leaning on this at this point. And, I think it begs moving on from, Jericho does his highlight reel and Kevin Owens interrupts almost immediately, and there's tension between the two. And this was one of the best segments, I think,
great,
that we could ever imagine.
Talk about swerves. Like,
talk about
M. Night Shyamalan would be having a hard-on for this.
Owens didn't care about the list. Owens is screaming at the monkeys who's running the Geritron, 6500 apparently. And they tease all of this anger only to blame Roman Reigns for all the problems between the two and for the match the night before. Once again, have to mention, Owens and Jericho are too damn entertaining to boo. And that might be a problem. It just might be a problem. Seth Rollins comes out. This was just tough because, once again, both these guys are Canadians. They're in their home country at the very least. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get cheered. And Seth was kind of meh. They really didn't care about Seth coming out. Roman comes out to save him very, very slowly. He's booed out of the building. And, we end up, having a world title match booked for later on in the night with Rollins versus Kevin Owens with Chris and Roman banned from ringside in an ODQ match.
It's no DQ and you banned people from the ringside? That doesn't make a lick of sense.
It's what they went with. The segment before all that was great. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Lana is out to introduce Rusev. She calls them all Americans, I believe, twice,
yes,
even though they were in Canada. Great job of trolling there by Lana. We get Enzo Amore tapping in just minutes to Rusev. This makes sense. Rusev is a beast. Enzo is not a beast, and he is a tag team performer. Rusev should be going over him that strongly. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've talked about this before. You have too. Enzo and Cass are almost untouchable in the way of their heat. Like they can lose and not lose anything in the way of popularity.
This was a good way to get Rusev back on TV, get him back winning after the whole Roman fiasco. So I was a big fan of all of that. We get the Golden Truth versus Anderson and Gallows in a match that will determine who's going to fight the New Day next week for the tag titles, because apparently the New Day have to put their titles up every week now on Raw. This is a really good match. I was expecting a squash match. This reminded me of how good Dustin Reynolds can be as Gold Dust. Still fast as lightning, still really crisp in the ring. Even R-Truth did a good job in this match, where he's usually a comedy character. They end up winning Anderson and Gallows with the Magic Killer, and they get the New Day next week. We've seen that match a bunch of times. Good to see Anderson and Gallows winning. This match had a stipulation. It had a reason to happen, and it happened.
Yeah, there's pluses to it because of what you said. There is a stipulation. We have the better team obviously winning, but we're building up now to a match that we have seen plenty of times.
And we imagine is going to happen. I think the New Day are going to cheat to win again next week, and I'm hoping Cesaro and Sheamus are the next challengers because of the cheating the time before. Or maybe it will be Anderson and Gallows.
Wouldn't it be good to have them, like, they cheat to win a few times and then ultimately lose to someone who cheated better than them?
That would work if they're going against a heel team like Anderson and Gallows.
Or the Revival.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself. That's not happening anytime soon, I don't think. Braun Strowman versus Sami Zayn. Braun drumps him. He jumps him from behind before the match even starts. Eventually the match does start, and Braun just dominates an almost lifeless Sami Zayn throughout this whole match. And Mick has to come out to stop the match before Braun really destroys Sammy. This was interesting. It's continuing Braun as this brute, as this dominating figure. Sammy, I don't think, gets too hurt by this because he was jumped from behind in the beginning and he's the underdog.
Yeah.
They just need to get Sammy into a point where he can start his own thing, where he can look a little bit better. But I don't dislike this, because it's a good thing for Braun Strowman, who has been booked well and who is on a good trajectory.
See, I'm a little bit concerned about Braun with this whole thing, because Sammy's extremely popular with the crowd, and I don't think that this particular action hurts him at all. But you almost want to think that WWE likes to put the baby face over in instances like this, and eventually, Sammy's going to get a win over Braun.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I feel like he is going to, and then when that happens, that Braun is going to be brought down a number of pegs.
I think that Sammy's a stepping stone of a guy that he can beat Sammy, and some people, at least in the crowd, like Sammy. The hardcore fans like him, and I think it's a stepping stone for him. That's the way I see it, but you may very well be right there. We end up with a segment with the women's champion, Charlotte, with Dana Brooke in the ring, and we get interruptions by all kinds of people. We get Sasha, we get Nia Jax coming out, and the whole idea is that Sasha wants her rematch from Hell in a Cell. There's a beatdown, Bayley comes out to help save her, and we end up with a tag match at the end of the day where we have Bayley and Sasha versus Charlotte and Nia. And Sasha taps out Charlotte, and I guess we're going to see another match next week with Sasha and Charlotte. I think that their feud has been very well done. I think it should be over now. They had a blow-off in a Hell in a Cell match. To me, that is the end of a feud. Time to move on to the next thing.
Yes, for logical purposes. No, for WWE purposes, because they believe that every champion deserves an automatic rematch, so they have to play that. And I hate that because of it.
Book yourself into a corner.
Yes. Every time a deserving champion ultimately wins the title, which ending a feud can absolutely lead to, you then have to go back into a rematch with that person. Like Daniel Bryan's ultimate win of the titles at WrestleMania. Great story. But really, when you think about it, by WWE logic, Randy Orton still never got a title shot back.
That's the important thing. You don't have to do that. You don't have to. You can be a little
convenient. They played it though.
But you can be a little convenient in your booking if you choose to. And I'm definitely fine with that. You can play a little fast and loose with that.
One thing I would have liked to have seen happen with this match after this match was, Graves playing up, Charlotte going, of course she's going to tap out because she has a more important match next week where her title's on the line. She doesn't want to be injured. She doesn't want to deal with
this match means nothing. The yes. match next week means everything.
Because they totally could have played that.
And they should do that more often with the heels, but unfortunately they don't. But
that's a rare time where I felt like Graves dropped the ball as being a heel commentator.
But he's usually very, very good. And he's been very, very good since he's been called up to Raw. But you're right. This is something that they should be pointing out more often. Cruiserweight triple threat to decide who is the number one contender to Brian Kendrick's Cruiserweight Championship.
Kendrick.
What did I say?
There's no S at the end of his name.
I thought I said Kendrick.
Sorry. Kendricks.
Well, maybe I'm just slurring, Mike.
Or...
You're very, very specific. You fucking call me out on goddamn everything. Listen, Rich Swann wins the match. I thought it was an enjoyable match. This is a good triple threat. There wasn't a lot to it because a lot of the
cruiserweights put on very good matches.
People just don't know what to think about it because they don't know the characters very well. Kendrick, killed it on commentary throughout the whole match.
I like his new flag.
He did a great job on commentary.
Have you seen the new flag?
I saw the new flag.
He did a great cruiserweight title.
Yeah, he did a great job on commentary. Swan won. We felt that Swan was going to be the next challenger, and he is. And I'm excited to go forward with that.
Yeah, it was you saw it a mile away, but it still told a good story. Swan probably has the best personality of anyone in the cruiserweight division, sans Brian Kendrick.
And it'll be interesting to see these guys go at one another. The main event. Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, in a no DQ match. This match was really hurt by the commercials. We had two commercials almost immediately when we came into the match. By the time the crowd actually got into this match with the big dive that Seth Rollins did off the balcony or whatever you want to call it, off the risers in the arena, they finally got behind Seth Rollins because they were 50-50 at best, kind of more pro Kevin Owens throughout the match. Jericho under a Zin Cara mask, which was a nice little nod to a situation that's happened recently backstage, attacks Rollins, even though he wasn't supposed to be there. We get a powerbomb onto the apron, Kevin Owens' signature that we haven't seen in a while, and he wins. He beats Seth Rollins, and I believe they're setting up Jericho and Seth because Seth, even though he wants the title, needs to get back at Jericho for continuing to... involve himself in his feud.
Yeah, they had this a little bit prior to Survivor Series, and I think we did talk about that for a little bit, that this should be the next logical step for Seth, so that I can't get to the title until I can get rid of his lackey.
Right.
And I think that makes sense at this point in time. It's a little weird that WWE made a joke out of their own stipulations by going, it's no DQ, but these two guys are banned from ringside, and then one guy comes to ringside.
You'll see something next week where Jericho gets punished for it. They set it up the way they set it up. This ended up being an okay match at the end. Once again, commercial breaks hurt it. Being in Canada, where Kevin Owens is even more than he is in the States, it was a problem with this, but they booked themselves that match. Maybe Rollins dives off of things will get him more over as a babyface. Who knows? And then we go on to SmackDown.
SmackDown is opened up with Shane McMahon coming to the ring.
That's a change.
Looking very out of it. Obviously, he had quite an incident at Survivor Series, and good for him for coming to the ring and actually doing some work, because it was an interesting spot because it looked like there was a lot of realistic stuff and there was a lot of work stuff going on, because
sure.
we didn't see an X thrown up by a referee. We didn't see a stretcher come out, which are typical for legit injuries. But we did also see like some care by
his eyes were glassed over.
Yeah.
There was definitely a problem, whether it was internal with the ribs or something, or his head.
What has gone viral with Randy Orton going over and saying something sure. to the family yeah. of Shane, which like Randy impresses me time after time. Like he's matured a lot since his younger days, and seeing something like that gives me a little more respect for that guy. But of course, we don't start with the people who actually won that match. A little disappointing.
No, they were an afterthought.
And we had some back and forth between Shane and
Dean and AJ Styles.
AJ and a little bit of Ellsworth involved in there, because Ellsworth has been granted a contract by SmackDown that Dean spoiled. And he's like, I don't want to spoil it, but you got a contract. This was a very weird Dean.
Let's just get this out of the way, because this was a reoccurring segment throughout the whole night. Dean Ambrose, Shane McMahon pissed off at him for attacking AJ Styles when yeah. he was supposed to be on the same team with him at Survivor Series. And all night, he kicked Dean out of the arena. Dean showed up with a pizza. He showed up dressed as the Mountie. He showed up later on in the main event, dressed as an Ottawa Senator. And the whole time, either Daniel Bryan or Shane were pissed off at him, trying to control him. He's a lunatic fringe. He's wacky. Let's just say, I thought this was relatively entertaining and a nice thread that went through the show that had some cohesion. What do you think?
I think it shows that the authority has no power over their people, because this was two nights in a row that someone was banned from ringside that was
consistently at ringside.
That was, yeah, that had influence over the outcome right. of a match.
I still found it entertaining. I think you're correct in your statement, though. This whole first segment just set up a ladder match where Ellsworth just gave up his contract and basically said, I'll earn it in a ladder match with AJ Styles at the end of the show in the main event.
Yeah. A contract in a ladder match on a pole, whatever you want to say. That's what we had booked out of this. Miz and Maurice backstage getting some headshots done. Daniel Bryan comes in and is mad at him for his cheating ways, and decides to put him up in a match against Kalisto, because Kalisto got screwed out of his match at Survivor Series. So, you know what? This guy got screwed. You screwed someone. So let the screwy do face the screwer.
That's perfect, Mike.
Makes about as much sense. And that's the match that we get to start things off. And didn't go for very long before we had Baron Corbin get involved in things, and his distraction leads to Miz hitting a skull-crushing finale for the win and retaining the title. Corbin Kalisto is obviously the feud that they're going for to finish off, or what they had started initially before Kalisto's injury.
Yeah, and this is fine. Baron Corbin continues to be kind of a loose cannon, which is a good thing for his character, the Lone Wolf. He's rubbing Daniel Bryan the wrong way consistently. I kind of like that storyline going on. Looks like Kalisto grabbed a chair at the end, used it. We're going to get a chairs match at TLC between
Kalisto
and Baron Corbin.
And then backstage, Shane and Bryan are taking a look at the monitor before Alexa Bliss walks in, talking about she was guaranteed a title shot. Becky Lynch says, okay, you can get a title shot at TLC. So we got that going on. Natalya does.
Natalya comes in with her whistle. She was the coach. She basically says it was actually Becky Lynch's problem. She was the reason why they lost their match at Survivor Series. And we get a match booked between the two of them later on in the evening.
Yeah. More to say about that?
Yeah.
Not real.
No.
Hype Bros versus The Ascension versus American Alpha versus Breezango in a tag team turmoil match, where the winner gets a tag team title shot, of the SmackDown variety. We started with Hype Bros against The Ascension. Hype Bros win. Then Hype Bros lose to Breezango. Kind of shocking.
That was cool.
And then American Alpha beats Breezango for the ultimate win. But at the end of this,
Usos came.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well. Yeah, we did have the Usos.
We broke down to the Usos versus the American Alpha, and a pretty good match. They actually had a longer extended version of this match. Finally, win was down to the last two teams after also beating the Vaudevillains were in there as well. And the American Alpha go over. Good match at the end, but then, as you said, the Wyatt family interrupts the celebration.
Yeah. This is a storyline that we were talking about a little bit earlier that has been poorly booked, but is somewhat coming together right now. I'm believing Orton now as a member of this family, where it just looked like, oh, he's going to turn on them within 2 weeks, just like Daniel Bryan did. But he's actually showing a little bit of loyalty and they're working together as a team. And I like this. I wish that the winners of the main Survivor Series match were a little more elevated than just a tag team thing. But you know what? I'll take this for what it is.
Would have liked to see them more featured because they won the premier bout. And also, I was kind of confused. I thought they were going to come out and continue the match, the tag team turmoil match, but apparently they're going to have a match next week. Does that match then decide who goes on to face Slater and Rhino? I didn't really understand it, quite honestly. But interested to see American Alpha work with the Wyatt family. We haven't seen that before. So
yeah,
that's a good thing.
Good fresh matches, good fresh feuds is always fun. Daniel Bryan and James Ellsworth. What did KO call him on Elmsworth or something like
remember.
That? It was good, but, more talk about the, you don't have to put you have this contract. It's guaranteed. You don't have to put it up against AJ. And he wants to. He wants to prove himself against a person that he feels that he's beaten two times now. And this is when, Mountie Dean comes in and he always gets his man. I'm surprised he didn't have a shock stick. Anything you need to add to this? All right. Natalia was taking on Becky Lynch while Alexa Bliss was on commentary. And Becky Lynch wins with the disarmer. And that is that.
Well, Alexa attacks her afterwards, leaves her laying. She's the next challenger. She was on commentary throughout the whole match. It was a good match. We've seen Becky Lynch and Natalia have good matches in the past. But the primary feud is Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss, and they're still doing a good job of keeping that going.
Yeah, and then we had Hype Bros pitching WWE Shop.
Sure.
Cool. And Miz talking with Daniel Bryan and saying that Dolph Ziggler doesn't deserve a rematch against him for the IC title. We see that that's going to come back to haunt him a little bit later.
No, it actually happened earlier.
Earlier?
Dolph Ziggler came out.
Was
and
that
super,
earlier?
Yeah, Dolph Ziggler came out and super kicked Miz.
We just watched this and it's just hard to.
Yeah. After his match, after he won versus Kalisto.
Oh, yes.
Dolph
yes,
Ziggler came
yeah.
out and super kicked him.
And didn't look anything like Dolph Ziggler.
He didn't for some reason. And then, Bryan set up their match for TLC. Ziggler's going to get his rematch versus Miz.
Yeah, that's correct. Sorry for forgetting that. Baron Corbin takes on Kane, and I feel like this is the never-ending story of we believe Kane should be in a squash match at this point in his career, or an extended squash, give the person a little bit more extra offense, and he loses. This was a no contest because Kalisto interfered.
Yeah, which I'm fine with this because Corbin continues to interfere with Kalisto's match. Kalisto's a babyface, but he's so worked up. He's so frustrated. He's so angry at Corbin. He had to get back at him. This is fine. This keeps their feud moving on and shows that Kalisto's willing to go and do what's necessary.
Main event time, AJ Styles and James Ellsworth in a ladder match for Ellsworth's contract. And color me surprised, James Ellsworth wins with help from Ottawa Senators' newest left wing, Dean Ambrose.
Well, here Dean comes, just like we expected him to. He did not come down on a Zamboni, which I would have called early on in the night.
I'm surprised and shocked.
This was fine. The James Ellsworth saga has had its ups and downs. I'm glad that he's signed. I think that the people tend to care about him. How long is his shelf life? Probably not very long, but we'll see. Maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised. AJ Styles being caught up in the ropes for an extended period of time that allowed Ellsworth to grab that contract. A little silly to me. This is AJ Styles, one of the most athletically gifted stars in wrestling today, if not in the last 25 years, and he could not get out from his foot being tangled in the ropes. Thought that was a little bit silly, but it is professional wrestling, and this is what happens sometimes.
Yeah, so that has concluded 4 days of professional wrestling.
At sometimes rough days of professional wrestling.
And we are leading into now back to having the separate pay-per-views, TLC for the SmackDown brand and Roadblock,
yeah.
For Raw.
Well, we got like a 2 week turnaround. They've got TLC on I think it's like December 4th. So it's not next week, it's the week after.
Jesus Christ.
Praise him. So we're going to be back at this really, really soon, Mike. I think we should probably get out of here because it's been a long night, a long 4 days. And honestly, you look like you need some sleep.
I was about to fall asleep during Raw. The only reason that I didn't almost fall asleep during SmackDown is because you were here watching it and we were doing this podcast thereafter. It's been a long past few days of professional wrestling, some goods, some bads. We're sticking with it for now because we fucking love this little saga that we do for so long, and we hope that you do as well. You can have different opinions than us, and that's absolutely fine. And let us know what you think on our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, MissSpots.com. You can tweet at us at MissSpots. You can follow us and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. There's many different ways that you can get this podcast. If you're not already, let a friend know, a family member know, a foe. A frenemy. Your best friend, Kevin Owens or Chris Jericho, let them know that we have our podcast available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and then you can also listen to us every Friday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on Geek Life Radio at geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name is Mike, and good night, good wrestling.